I've been cheated by you since I don't know when.
God, it's like I'm there.
The orchestra.
You're where? You didn't say you were anywhere in particular.
He's there.
It's like you just two dudes standing in like an alley downtown, just like recreating mom. Like, yeah, it feels like I'm there. Like, that's where it feels like I am. Mamma mia. Well, welcome.
We're recording.
Of course, okay. We're recording.
You know what? If you listened to that last episode and said, "Oh yeah, cool," despite all of that history, I still want to enter parenthood. Or maybe, you know, you're in a position where someone you know or love is entering this new role, and you want to be supportive as possible.
We don't know anybody like that. None of the hosts of this podcast, certainly.
Yeah, it's also possible that you just find my voice soothing, you know, super screeching about the atrocities against women. You know, whatever the case may be. Welcome back to Wolverine Patrol. I'm Jenna with my partner Jack and his co-host John and Tim.
Part two, Jenna episode.
Here we go.
I want your boogaloo.
There's been an update on that. I don't know if you've heard about anything.
What?
We don't boogaloo no more.
Oh, no.
Talking about the Boog Boys?
Yeah.
The Hawaiian shirt
fascists or whatever?
Oh, yeah, they ruined it for me because that's my favorite thing. Yeah.
You know what? They can't have them. I've decided they can't have Hawaiian shirts.
Yeah.
They can't take them from... They are property exclusively of Fat Man. And not just fascist Fat Man.
They took Pepe from us.
Yeah, they can't have everything fat nerds enjoy, okay? Like, I'm sorry, that's not what this episode's about. It's about motherhood and capitalism.
Well, actually, this episode, we are going to focus on parenthood and capitalism.
Parenthood!
How to make sure your kid never grows up to be a boob boy.
Yeah. So I think you said boob boy there for a second.
A little bit, I have to say.
My child's going to be an ass man.
I'm going to make sure he grows up to be a boob man.
Like his father before him.
Oh, man.
See, okay, how am I supposed to follow that and talk about, hey, you really need to secure food for your kids. It's really important.
Oh, man, we just do it. That's,
oh, gosh. It's,
yeah, we have to have a good sense of...
That's going to get me so off topic.
Probably,
okay.
Yeah. We were always those kids in school, too.
Yeah true.
Parenthood. I would argue that parenthood is comprised of three basic things, right? You need to make sure that your kid has housing. You need to make sure that your kid has food. And water, obviously.
Right.
And you need to make sure that your kid has education, some sort of education, or else they're going to fill in the gaps for themselves, and we as leftists cannot allow that to happen.
Yeah, we got to make sure that they're learning the right things. Because there's so many wrong things out there for them to learn.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Sure. That totally makes sense, yeah.
Absolutely. So the first thing that I wanted to talk about is food security. And this is a massive concern, and it is a concern that is only going to get more and more urgent as time goes, because as talked about in previous podcasts, with the ongoing climate change crisis, the way that it is, crops are going to start failing, food
Absolutely.
Prices are going to skyrocket, and yeah, sure, maybe there's food on the shelf, but we have seen that capitalists are more than willing to throw out perfectly good food, nutritional food, massive quantities, tons of food, because they would rather do that, be that wasteful, than they would give it away and not turn a profit for their stockholders. So, we as leftists and as people need to make a plan for what we are going to do. I just want to read a quick statistic. And that is, in 2006, 1 in 7 children experienced food instability. Or it wasn't 6, I'm sorry, 1 in 7 in 2006.
And this is across the entire United States?
Yes.
It's 1 in 2 in Cincinnati. Or like 1 in 3, 1 in 2.
That breaks my heart.
It's staggering. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And Dayton, I think like over 50% of... like families with children of like school age or below the poverty line.
Yep.
It is insane.
It's the same here. Yeah, it's about half.
But Nationally, 1 in 4 children are experiencing food stability right now. In this year alone, SNAP eligibility has increased 17%.
Oh, yeah.
That is absolutely just bonkers, y'all. Yeah. It is bonkers. And understandably, you know, we're having a pandemic. Their jobs are being lost. But I just want to point out, y'all, this is pandemic light.
Yeah.
For a pandemic, this is truly not even a large pandemic. And that is not to downplay the people who have lost their lives and the jobs that have been lost and the real chaos that has ensued in this. Please understand that I am not saying that at all, but I truly do believe in my heart and in my soul that things are going to get worse.
Mm-hmm. They are. It's been fairly mild interruption, comparatively speaking.
Because mm-hmm. we're also coming out of the worst part of what's normal flu season, and just because of how the weather is and that impacts the symptoms that people have, it's going to be so much worse going into it this winter.
Absolutely. And what's really perturbing to me is that, like you said, this is pandemic-wide compared to how serious pandemics can get, and it still absolutely whooped our economy and caused a 20% increase in SNAP benefits. And it hasn't even gotten to, like, as bad as people think it might get yet. So that's
a breakdown of supply chains.
Yeah,
right?
Everywhere.
That is, like, what this pandemic has showed us is just how an ill-equipped capitalism, which relies on being the most efficient instead of the most effective,
right,
is. So, like, we've talked before, you know, Jack has his gardening podcast that he's gonna get started up.
And absolutely.
We've talked about, you know, what do we do? Where do we go from here? And, like, I just want to tell everybody at home that if you have a small bit of land, even if it's just a 4-foot by 10-foot raised bed system, if you look up succession planting, you will be harvesting things and putting things in as the things that are being harvested go out. You're constantly switching. And is it a more complicated system? Absolutely, you bet. You're going to be in that garden. You're going to be doing all kinds of stuff. But the amount of plants that it takes to feed, say, a family of 4 is not that much. Now, that one raised bed is not going to do it, but it would help if you lose your job and you have a month where you need to eat on what you have, or even just personally, I didn't want to rely on a system that didn't care about my family or me. So I said, how do I make as much stuff as I possibly can?
And you can do it too.
You can absolutely do it too. And if it isn't getting a garden, like, if that isn't your thing, are there other things, are there other resources that you can offer someone who maybe has a green thumb? Like, can you provide the mason jars needed to can, and they give you some of the produce and you supply the mason jars?
Sure. Maybe you have land you're interested in allowing somebody else to garden on.
Yeah. I mean, you know, my biggest thing, I hate when you drive by a church, right, and you see this massive swath of land that they have, that it isn't full of fruit trees and raised beds, and, like, that their community is not being served. So, like, maybe we need to start talking to churches and, like, be like, hey, can you get on that? I don't have all of the answers, but I know that what is currently happening cannot continue.
Well, and I think that, like, that goes back to what we were talking about in the previous episode. That is on purpose. Like, the fact that it is a kind of a bourgeois custom to have a front lawn, to not have, because it used to be viewed as a sign of poverty if all the land that you owned was all covered in fruiting, flowering plants that you were eating. And, like, you had a cottage garden. That was a sign of poverty. And so it was homely. Yeah, it was homely. So it became like a bourgeois custom to have a lawn instead.
Yeah, just some useless ass grass over your land.
So if you have a house and you have a lawn, take it down. Let's, like, actually make some real changes.
Fuck a lawn.
Well,
that's the problem, though, right? Is that a lot of places make you have a lawn.
Yeah.
With homeowners associations and other things.
Do not buy a house with a homeowners association. That is absolute crazy.
I mean, that is difficult in this day and age, though.
It is. And again,
you know, that is actually, you know, showing my privilege, right? I have this privilege where the house that I bought, I didn't want a what are they called? Homeowners Association. Yeah. And so that I didn't get it, right? And that is not the case with every mother, right?
A lot of people living in condos do not have a choice, because almost all condos will have a homeowners association.
Exactly.
So, I mean, that's one, I know one reason that people don't necessarily prefer them is, you know, as far as other reasons, but that does suit a lot of people's lifestyle.
Yeah, so, but can you talk to your condo association about having a communal garden? Is it possible that you can advocate, that you can come together with your neighbors and you can actually make a move towards sustainability? And, like, are you probably going to be the one doing most of the work? Yeah, baby. Is that tomato that just came out of your garden going to be so sweet? Yes, it's so good. But, like,
we love to see it.
We also have to acknowledge that, you know, housing is a you cannot have children and not have a house, right? You cannot have a child and not have a place for them to stay, because CPS will be called.
Right. Yeah.
And you will have your children removed from
they've gotta have somewhere to live.
Care. And not every parent can put down roots like close to their home, close to their work, right? Because they're working here 1 year, they're working there another year.
Oh, yeah.
They say, I have to rent. I have to rent because If my job moves, I have to be able to move.
You got to be able to get out of there, yeah.
Absolutely. Yep.
Especially in places like Cincinnati or Dayton, where the public transport is not so good.
Yeah. Atrocious.
Atrocious. Yeah, that's a good word for it.
Yeah, and, like, I think that it's really telling, you know, of my privilege, just that not every parent has, like, the massive line of credit available for getting the bank to, like, graciously allow these parents to take on the debt.
Yeah.
Of a house.
It's nice of them
to do that. Which is literally, y'all, mortgage is literally translated as the death tax.
Yep.
Well, I have to find this. I'll try to dig it up and whatever. But there was an actual study that found that, like, higher unemployment numbers and home ownership had this weird correlation. And it was because people are kind of anchored by this thing that they can't leave to go find other jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why people kind of end up stuck in a cycle of, like, I don't know, wherever you were born, you die and all that stuff. Or mm-hmm. I mean, things like, yeah, so.
Absolutely. And I think that this is, like, to add to that, you know, there's this huge movement of, like, tiny house living.
Yeah.
And I think that that was something that people were using as a necessity before, but it became trendy. So now communities that rely on small house appliances, smaller spaces, studios, are being edged out by the gentrification of people wanting to come in and live this trendy lifestyle.
Yeah.
And it's causing the price to go up for these families who actually needed those resources. It's
right.
The same thing with, you know, the prices of Goodwill going up because, well, you know,
it's literally
it's
like
trendy now.
It's trendy to, like, live in a trailer now.
Yeah,
so they're all,
we called them trailer trash when I was growing up, but
right.
now it's not. It's not trailer trash.
Yeah, it's tiny homes.
It's tiny homes.
Right,
adorable.
But
so
the problem is, I'm gonna guess all the manufacturers that were making those common sense, like, good livable trailers for people to live in are making these goofy bougie ones now and again.
Yep.
Cornering out that market, aren't they? Like,
yeah.
It's becoming probably. And I would guess it's becoming probably harder and harder to live in that kind of.
Well, there's
absolutely.
Also a major issue too for when you purchase these, because it is considered to be a manufactured home, so you can't do things like refinance if you need to. You know, you do have, like, some sort of mortgage on
insurance
it.
Is different.
Insurance is different. But yeah, like, if you want to try to sell the home too, it, you know, because it's manufactured, it can depreciate in value even if you keep it, like, in the utmost condition.
Especially with how fast trends are flying. You think those chunky floors are going to be good in 6 weeks? You think that hexagonal tile that you put in the bathroom? No. Like, trends are going so fast now that when you blink, it's gone. And capitalism needs that. We have to ramp up production. We have to make people want to, you know, look at their homes and be like, oh, I wish that I could fix it up and make it look. But you're grabbing onto things that you can't catch, right?
Yeah.
All that matters is there a roof over your head, and is there love in your home, right? Like,
You would think so, yeah. I would think that would be
maybe
important.
I'm just radical. Maybe I'm just a radical over here.
No, I understand.
Here.
But yeah, you know? I understand what you're saying. It's, yeah.
And radical like in the 80s and 90s, yes.
Yeah, gosh.
Radical.
Radical.
It's radical to be loved by your parents.
My heart just starts playing in the background.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Motley Crue, baby.
Yeah, but I mean, it's interesting to think about just like food and housing and the way that those things are intentionally held out above parents' heads as things that can be revoked by the state at any time if that parent decides that they are no longer going to live as a wage earner.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And produce a profit for a capitalist. Like, the way that children are used by capitalists as collateral, and then they turn around and the, you know, people who simp for capitalism online say that they are the ones who are, quote-unquote, defending children.
Absolutely.
You know, we defend the unborn, or we defend children from fucking elite pedophiles.
QAnon, baby.
QAnon, yeah. You know?
And they disguise the entire educational system as this, like, we're teaching kids what they need to know. No, that is a way that they're checking up to make sure that that the parent is falling in line.
Oh,
if
yeah.
If you have a child who's, you know, I was staying at my grandma's, now I'm staying at my aunt's, like, there, you get flagged in the system.
Oh yeah.
And so
don't even get me. You can't. We talked about this a lot with Kamala Harris too. Don't even be freaking started on truancy laws.
Oh yeah, or just
and how we
like
treat the parents of truant children without giving them any material assistance for why that could possibly be happening.
Or people that try to send their kids to a school district that's out of their residential area
and are in massive trouble. But you know, if somebody pays a college, the college scandals. Oh, you know, they get to go to this cushy prison where.
Right.
It's basically not even a punishment.
Right. You try to get your kids into a better, you know, public school or whatever outside of your residential area, you get in trouble. You have college amounts of money to send them to a fancy private high school. It doesn't matter if it's on the other side of town. It's fine.
Yeah. I think it's insane that somebody can be sent to prison in general for truancy, like the parent of a child.
Yeah.
Because you're sending a mother to jail because their kid is too cool.
Yeah, dude.
That is, I mean, it plays to this weird liberal ideology of like, you'll spout, oh, I would do anything for my kid. But then you turn around and you demonize a mother who would lie, cheat, or steal for hers when you just admitted that you would do anything for your kid. Are you really going to tell me that you would send your kid to a school that was had received F ratings for 2 years and then finally eked by with a D rating, unless you absolutely had to, because the kid in the school system was what made it so that you could put food on the table when they got home? No,
yep.
You wouldn't.
Not at all.
You
no.
Absolutely would not. So it's this overarching systems of... It's just, it's all connected. And it drives me crazy when people don't connect the dots, I guess. My mind is going a thousand places trying
like,
to connect it.
People will respond to that like, oh, well, just move to a different school system. It's like, you can't. You know, school systems,
exactly.
The properties around school systems are inflated by the fact that property taxes pay for schools.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so if you have a really good school district, the homes that are around there are naturally going to be appraised higher and are going to have higher property values,
right.
Higher taxes, and you're not going to be able to get a bank to give you a fucking loan
which,
to pay
for
it.
Which, by the way, we figured out in this state many years ago is actually unconstitutional.
Yeah.
To fund schools that way, and but there's no real mechanism to make the state change it. And that's the thing that's so funny to me about when you find that the state is doing something illegal or unconstitutional, not an individual, not a private is that, okay, the way the state of Ohio funds schools is illegal. All right, well, if nobody's going to change it, I mean, what are you going to do? Put the state of Ohio in prison?
Right.
Yeah. Well, and it goes back to like what we were talking about earlier.
State of Ohio is
with,
prison.
Yeah. State of Ohio is prison.
There like, it is. Ohio is Rorschach in jail, and that the rest of the states are trapped in America with us.
Yes. Yes.
No, that's definitely Florida. That's Florida. Yeah. That's totally Florida.
Yeah, absolutely.
But like so in, when after enclosure, all the land in the world has been parceled out, right? And everybody owns land. Like, no matter where you go, no matter what you're looking at,
you can't go and find a little plot that land, no one has laid claim to.
Yeah, that land is not owned by somebody, right? And after that process has run its course, now the social divisions are between people who have land. And not just people who have land and who don't have land, but between people who have land that is well appraised.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
it's the right land in the right area.
It's this way that you are able to stratify society and create hierarchies within a society without having those hierarchies be so explicit and crude as they were under the more semi-feudal slave system back in like the 1800s and the early 20th century, right? Because as racial hierarchies have been officially, you know,
legally speaking, delegitimized.
Now, instead, you have those same hierarchies being reproduced through land appraisal that used to be reproduced through land ownership.
Yeah.
You know?
And the question is, what do we do? What do we as leftists do? I mean, is the we don't have the answer. Like, do we do a land co-op where a bunch of people go in on land? Do you try and
That's difficult, too.
Yeah. Do you try and buy a home with the economy being as messed up as it is, like,
right? Do you just roll the dice on that, or what?
Like, there is no good option. Like, we're all forced into this giant kerfuffle of what are you gonna do? How are you gonna house your kid? And like, it's made to be difficult.
Yeah. It's designed to squeeze you for everything, so you can't fight it.
Yeah.
And you're so tired by the end of the day. Okay, so you're a working parent. You've just worked 8 hours. You get home. You're immediately bombarded by your child because children are going to be excited to see you no matter what.
Oh, yeah.
They are just jibber-jabbering away, and you're like, I have heard the same fact 57,000 times, right? And you, like, take it out on your kid, and they don't understand why you're so upset. And that causes a divide between parent and child, which then capitalism exploits.
Yeah.
You are causing a divide between your partner and yourself, which is a divide that capitalist exploits. Mm-hmm. Capitalism exploits.
Yeah. We really broke down how that, I mean, that is in the core of all of it going all the way back. It's about creating those rifts. It's really weird that capitalism both like needs these like traditional nuclear families, but then has to institute a certain contradiction
rips them
apart. But from within, it divides them, forces this hierarchy on them, and builds contempt from the inside.
Absolutely.
Very weird.
And it's important to point out that historically, the nuclear family was not the primary method of social organization.
Oh, absolutely.
The primary method of social organization for most of human history was a village of between 50 and 70 people. And that is why, on average, most people can only remember 50 to 70 other people's names and faces at a given time.
Well, yeah, and I think that it's interesting, you know, when we talk about like food production specifically, I have been producing a lot of food for my family out of my garden. I have been spending a lot of hours canning food and freezing food and chopping food and making food and storing food and all of that. And it is such a isolated activity.
Oh, yeah.
In my house, all alone with my kids, who I love dearly, who help me. But we weren't designed to do that. It was bring in the bounty.
Yeah.
Everybody, get
we
your hands.
We all hang out together
your hands,
and do
we
it.
Make, we talk while we're like peeling tomatoes. We're going to talk while we peel tomatoes. We're going to talk while we're processing. And like, we all feel so bad.
Mm-hmm.
We all feel so alienated. And we're like, why do I feel this way? Well, because capitalism is profiting
from you feeling,
from
that, way.
You
yeah.
feeling that way. Like,
absolutely.
You feel bad? Go buy something. Is it a cheeseburger? Is it a diamond? What makes you feel better? Be the king of your castle. It's so bizarre. It's so
and like
bizarre.
Teaching and like you can teach kids that that's true, but like those methods of advertising and like those social conditions still affect them.
Oh yeah,
you know, it's it and like you talk about like how do you teach kids to like be a leftist? Like, well, it's hard to answer that question because like, you know, they're going to form their own opinions based on what they're observing around them. You
absolutely.
Know?
Yeah, you can't. I mean, you know, none of us became leftists because of our parents, right?
Oh, no.
But we did. And I mean, I don't think it would be reasonable to expect that our kids would just become that. I would hope that because we're leftists, we can get our kids to go that way with it. Because unlike maybe some of the more hierarchically minded or kind of, I don't know, more so than like kind of the politics our parents were raised with, there is, I think, more of an emphasis on like sitting your kid down and being like, look, this is why we do this. This is why, you know, we're empathetic human beings. And you make that appeal to them. I think most people, you know, if can get behind that, it just becomes a question of what the outside influences are. And you can't always control those.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Like, especially not when your kids are at school 8 hours a day. You
definitely.
Know?
And like, I would argue, even though I haven't successfully yet raised a leftist, like I'm combining these things from my partner's upbringing and my upbringing, like hoping that I'm going to have success because, you know, I've seen people come from conservative parents and they're like wonderful leftist individuals. And like, there isn't a how-to manual to raise a leftist, but I think that this is like a good topic to have an open dialogue of how can we bring our left theory from practice, from like the lofty theory realm to the practical realm. And how do we offer an alternative to like capitalism's death clutch in the space that is our homes and our interpersonal relationships? So like, I thought it would be kind of fun to, I don't know, call this section how to decapitalize your home. Okay.
There you go. Okay.
So
I'm here for it.
I think that something that gets just so freaking ingrained in our child's life is advertisement and brand recognition.
Absolutely.
And like, as much as possible, you want to ban this from your lexicon and your home. So how do we do that? Like, I would highly recommend that you cut the cord. Do not do cable television because these programs are not educationally valuable.
No.
And they play the same 4 freaking ads over and over and over and over and over and over and brainwash children. And they're just like, do you see it? I need it.
Honestly, it's so easy to get ad-free
what
stuff
is
for
it?
Kids now.
Yeah.
Well, I was paying an extra like $3 a month on my Hulu account just to get rid of the ads.
Oh my gosh, you have to.
And yeah, it's like another capitalist scheme, of course, but then at the same time, it's just kind of, it frees you from the advertisement and just lets you veg out and do what you need to do by watching your shows.
It frees you kind of, but like you also have to be aware of like certain, how do I say this? Certain young toy review YouTubers that might rhyme with crying schmurled. Like, do not allow that in your home.
Oh, right. I don't know who that is, so I believe you.
He is like 8.
Oh.
And they send him toys.
He's 8.
And
that sounds awesome.
And he unboxes them.
Man, fuck political
He's
podcasts.
Like the
I want to be that kid.
Millionaire or something like that.
I want to be him when I grow up.
Yeah, I was going to say, that rocks, dude, honestly.
But, like, you can block the channel, right?
Yeah.
Like, just don't allow it.
Sure.
And, like, when it comes to these toys, like, ask your kid, what is this advertisement trying to sell us?
Yeah.
And, like, the kids are normally going to shoot back, like, fun, or it's the coolest toy ever. And, like, you have to take the time to really explain what is being sold. Like, for instance, it's just a hunk of plastic that shoots projectiles, and it does the same thing that your awesome slingshot does. Like, you already have this, right? Or, you know, we have a lot of stuffies. We have so many. Maybe not this one.
Yeah.
And I think that my personal favorite, like, late capitalism junk toy protection method is to, like, look up these horrible reviews for these toys and do, like, a dramatic reading of them with your kid. Like, act out
that
how
rocks.
Exactly this toy failed.
That's really good. That's really funny. I love that.
Really, yeah.
So that they see, like, what actually is happening and help them see past the, you know,
lights. I wonder how many times as a kid I would not have bought a toy or not like wanted a toy if I could go on YouTube and watch some kid watch the thing break in 2 seconds.
You know?
How many times would you have been like, huh, well, that kind of sucks, huh?
Well,
huh, maybe commercials are bullshit.
Absolutely. Like,
would have been very helpful. More than once, I'm sure.
So, you can do it. You can do it, Mama. I mean, Amazon reviews, YouTube reviews, you definitely can do it. Like, just even freeing yourself from the cable, or like John said, skipping the ads of Hulu by paying the extra money, which is crap, but, you know, what you have to do. There's also a really great app on Roku specifically, which is the PBS Kids app. So you can have educational televisions at all times, but a word to the wary, it does have Caillou, and I have not found a way to remove or block it. Like, just know it's there.
What's wrong with Caillou?
Oh,
yeah. The fact that he looks like Ron.
Okay. Have you ever experienced the most bratty child ever, who always gets their way? It's Caillou.
Oh, okay. All right.
It's horrible.
All right.
Just
I won't let my kids watch Caillou. No, wait. No. I won't let my cat watch Caillou either.
At first, I thought you said Kaiju, and I'm like, this is a Godzilla fan from childhood who has a Godzilla.
Don't tell me I can't show
arm.
My future child
my
Godzilla.
Kids are, yeah, exactly. But anyway.
No worries. Important. Super important. But, like, I think that we parents need to limit advertisement, and then when we see it, we need to counter with if it needs an advertisement, you don't need it. When was the last time you saw an advertisement for fresh air? When was the last time you saw an advertisement for food? Not a specific food, just food. Like, hey, eat today. You don't need it, because right. The things that we need don't need advertised. And like, try to use the description and not the brand name as much as possible. So like, for instance, like cookie sandwiches for Oreos, or like popping candy for Pop Rocks.
I keep bumping you.
And like at our house, we might say, hey, can you grab the triangle corn chips in the purple bag if we want some Doritos? And, you know, that's because sweet chicken Doritos.
Triangle corn chips. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
This sounds like what we're going to call it, like, after the revolution. Like, yep. The people's triangle corn chips.
The people's chips.
Yeah, the people's chips.
I mean, honestly,
and the people's cookie,
you sound like you're on Chopped. You know, on Chopped, where they have, like, the descriptions. Like, and does it sound a little silly? Yeah. But, like, giving, like, proper nouns to things is also silly.
That's
and like,
true. Yeah.
If a kid is like, Mom, I have to have Doritos. Dad, oh, I'll die without Oreos. You could always do a blind taste test between the brand names and the generic versions. And like, you might have to rig the ballot. But like, do a blind test.
Rig that rock.
And like, show them, you know, it just because it has a name and has an advertisement doesn't mean that it's better quality. You can make a game out of it. And also, like, show them that chart of the companies that own the processed treats.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter what you pick. Like, there are, what, six? Was it six to ten companies that own?
But Jenna, we're gonna responsibly buy our way out of the ills of capitalism.
No.
Oh, we're not?
Brand names. Oh, man. Like, having brand name
But they're all also
loyalty.
Made in the same factories as the off-brand shit.
Yeah, and having rocks. Brand name loyalty is just, like, spooky as hell. Like, you just look ridiculous.
Yeah.
I only eat Jif. They literally ripped the jar off of the Jif and just put the Kroger brand on top of it.
Do you remember? Okay, see, that's very funny, because it's funny that you said Jif specifically, because I remember their old commercial used to be like, Moms Like Us Choose Jif. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh yeah, they were milking that. Do you want to be a good parent?
And they would
play it on the children's channel, so it'd be like, if your mom fucking loves you,
she's going to
get you Jif peanut butter.
And it's so ridiculous. It tastes the same.
Yeah, all peanut butter is just sticky, sugary.
Delicious goo.
Yeah, goop. Like, it's still sticky, delicious brown goop. Like, it's, who cares? Mm-hmm.
So, another tool that, like, I would recommend parents using is delayed gratification as much as possible. And, like, I don't even know, what does that mean? Okay, so if you go to the store and your kid's like, hey, can I get this candy? I heard it's so good. you can have a list at the grocery store and say, oh, you know, is that on our list? Like, can you check? Maybe I missed that it was on our list. Yeah. Like, can you just take a look? And they're like, oh, it isn't on the list. And you can just be like, okay, well, you know, we have to buy things that are on our list and then we have to get home. But if you would be willing to help me unload all of the groceries into the house and put everything away, then we can add the candy to our list when we get home for the next time that we come to the store. And a lot of times when we get home, the desired candy brand has switched like thrice. Okay. So you delay that gratification as much as possible. And you can do it with toys too. Like, oh, I saw this commercial for this amazing toy. Like, I promise I'll play with it, I promise. And it's like, you know, wow, it's a long way until your birthday, but Christmas is before your birthday. Do you want me to tell people in our life that this is something that you'd enjoy for a gift? And they're like, no, I want it now, because they're kids and they right. throw a fit.
Absolutely.
And you're like, you know, I understand that you saw this toy and it reminded you that, you know, you wanted it and we haven't talked about it. So I'll tell you what, you can tell me 3 awesome things about this toy. But after that, we really need to get back to shopping because your dad's waiting for us. And like in these situations, you're delaying the gratification that advertisement or like brand recognition has like pre-programmed into your kid.
To make people want instant gratification.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And like, by all means, if your kid is hungry, get them an orange or an apple or whatever it is. I'm not saying like, don't let them have candy. And if you want to give them candy, be like, oh, you know, we got that last time. Let's get this one so that you're forcing them to not, like, focus hyper in on... Because it's not about, I like chocolate and caramel and nougats. How many candy bars on the market have chocolate and caramel and nougats in it?
Like, absolutely.
It's just, they see that brand and they're like, ugh, I need that. Just because capitalism requires constant consumption does not mean that you and your kids have to engage. You can walk away from it. You can break the cycle. And you can say no to the shit. Like, even as people try and gift it to you, because, you know, it just shouldn't make you feel bad to throw it away. It was crap when they were trying to give it to you. Like, don't. You only need 4 stuffed animals. No, you can have as many as you want. But
well, and what's interesting is that like things like clothes and shoes and toys and like the things that people think that kids need, those things are produced in such material abundance. It's insane. I mean, if you go to like a resale shop and you see just like the piles and piles of kids' clothes and piles of toys that are like barely ever touched, there are plenty to go around, right? But buying new is actually what is required for the capitalist system to continue to function. So they're teaching your kids, there's plenty to go around. We do not need to buy hardly mm-hmm. anything brand new at the store except for food. Like, we do buy food at the store, but really, like, we don't go out to the store and buy all brand new clothes. No, we go to the resale shop and we buy them used, because buying them new is taking resource money and intensive. Very resource intensive. And that is actually what is required to stimulate growth, quote unquote, you know, versus if you buy things that are resold and you are using resources that are just being shifted around instead of requiring them to be made new, you know?
That's a great point. Like, just talking to your kids about the actualities of life.
Where does this come from? How was this made? This oil was extracted from the ground in Saudi Arabia, and it was shipped to a refinery where it was made into plastic that was shipped to China that was, you know, right. melted down over there and poured into a mold. And that's what this toy actually is. And then it was shipped across the ocean and across the continent to you.
And you said that you worked in education, yes, John?
Yeah, briefly. I was that was my major for the first 4 years of college. I got into student teaching, was horrified by it, and
yep,
actually
same.
Had some PTSD from it that I didn't realize until a year later.
So yeah. You guys don't have kids, but like you know like the inner workings of kids, like their psyche a little bit.
I worked with kids for a long time. Yeah.
What happens when kids are given a lot of choices of like toys? Like
they're
have
overwhelmed.
A lot of toys. Okay.
Yeah. And they I don't know.
And what happens when they're overwhelmed?
They freak out.
And oftentimes don't even play with the toys that you provide them. Right. So instead of buying 50 toys,
right,
buy 5 toys that can be used 50 ways.
Right.
Kids don't need to be told, like, what to do or how to do something. They're going right. to find the a way. Okay.
Like a in my house,
straws and sticks are a high commodity item.
Oh. Sweet. So you do a lot of crafting.
Don't even know how it is the, like, creme de la creme that it is in my house. But we work with it because I got trees for days. So go find me the best sticks you can find.
Hell yeah.
And
I love a good stick.
I mean, they're like, it's an airplane. It's a car. It's a snake. It's a worm. Like, kids nice. Are so neat. Kids are so neat. And so
yeah.
if you're overwhelming them, like Tim said, and you're just shoving the next awesome new toy down their throat because that's what all their peers have, and you can't, like, God forbid they be different from their peers. You just consume. It really fucks them up as kids. Like, look at our boomer parents.
It's not what their brains are designed to do.
Yeah.
Exactly.
They're not designed to have infinite choice forever. They need structure, and they need to, like, and I don't mean that in, like, some oppressive authoritarian way, but, like, kids need to be shown, it seems. I mean, like, just a basic educational psychology even that I took in college, that, like, things are done this way. Like, you can explore some and have, like, some options, but, like, you don't need every single conceivable thing ever constantly being thrown at you all the time. You need an A and a B so you can learn how to work from A to B.
Right.
And that doesn't change when you become an adult.
No.
That onslaught of commodities continues to fuck you up as an adult.
Yeah, it screws with your brain development all throughout.
Yeah, or if you're a big nerd like me, you still want to buy toys.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We're at about the last 10-minute mark here.
Okay, so...
I know you had some things you wanted to do at the end.
I think that the question that I thought that needed answered today most is, where do we go from here? And I think it's a lofty question.
Yeah, I was about to say, hopefully not off a cliff.
But, you know, in an ideal world, we abolish capitalism and every mechanism that it has a hand in.
Yeah, that would be very cool.
However, realistically, I think that stay-at-home parents need to know their worth and demand a fair wage for it is, like, very first.
Damn straight.
Parents should not be expected to rear children for free.
No.
We need to shift public opinion from, like, stay-at-home parents being the selfless act of love to a necessary function and a labor power.
Damn right.
Stay-at-home parents should receive wages the same as any other wage labor job. Like, for instance, cooks make minimum wage, and we cook. Social workers charge $100 an hour for emotional support, which we provide. And house cleaners can charge anywhere from $10 to $15 an hour. And let me tell you, we clean. Like, we deserve that money. You deserve that money, okay?
Absolutely.
Like, we can play a quick math game. So every day has 24 hours in it. And maybe, like, we're feeling nice and we're only going to charge a flat rate for every hour we're on the clock because kids' needs are unpredictable. So 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, it comes to a work week of 168 hours that stay-at-home parents are either working or on the clock. And we're not charging, we're working overtime, but we're not going to charge it, right? And at the $7.25 minimum wage, we will receive in 1 week $1,218. What if we aren't feeling so nice and we charge per child? So if you have 2 kids, that's $2,436. And, like, okay, maybe the government needs to put a cap on the number of children that you can charge for. Like, you can have as many kids as you want, but you're only able to charge for 3. That comes out to $3,654 a week. So in a month, at minimum wage, not clocking in any overtime for 3 kids, you have $14,616, which comes out to $190,008 for caring for the maximum number of children every hour for a year. But, like, we're good citizens, right? We want a robust social net for those less fortunate than us. And, you know, universal birth control is expensive. And we want that. Oh, yeah. So we're going to play with the big, scary 50% tax. And you're still left with a yearly sum of 95, $1,004 in your pocket for the maximum number of children. Does that sound fair? Okay, if it doesn't, then we'll play with 12 hours a day, which is the average child awaking time. And we're still going to do the $7.25 minimum wage.
Okay.
And 4 hours of overtime at $10.50, 365 days out of the year for the maximum number of children with a 50% tax rate taken out to fund these robust social programs, that would still come out to $54,750 in your pocket in a year. And if you're looking at me like, that's crazy, no government would ever have a system like that, you would be wrong, because the Soviet Union did it. They paid mothers for the compensation of reproduction and rearing those children. And so, like, really, you're getting workers for a steal, Mr. Government. Like,
yeah, that's actually that's a pretty fair price to raise somebody for building the next generation of workers that you need to forge your society.
Absolutely.
I think 50 grand, 50, 60 grand a year is pretty friggin' fair.
But they don't want to pay it. Even
90 grand a year is pretty friggin' fair.
I used the word steal for a reason.
Yeah.
They are stealing from us because they shift the responsibility of raising workers from the ruling class onto the working class.
They do.
And it is a $1 trillion industry. And, you know, I think that obviously, like, a huge problem is fathers and capitalism. Because right now, fathers are not getting paternity leave.
Nope. Not at all. 0%.
I imagine you can surmise what my opinion on the absolute criminal extortion the maternity leave in this country happens to be. Like, to put it in perspective, puppies and kittens legally cannot be separated from their mothers before they're 8 weeks old. And, like, women who are leaking from their breasts and expelling lochia, which is the, like retributal afterbirth that happens after you don't have a period for 9 months. It's
different from jalochia, which is ghost peppers, just to be clear.
Definitely.
Hopefully they don't
just
get mixed.
Just as spicy,
yeah,
though.
That'd be messy.
Just as
yeah.
spicy. But they're expected to kiss their sweet babies that are just 6 weeks old goodbye for the privilege of generating profit for a company that would no sooner replace them without a second thought. It's asinine.
And used to do that until it was explicitly made illegal.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Very cool.
It's...
yeah, it's a mess.
I have so much more to say. I really do. We're coming up on time, though, aren't we?
We have a couple minutes here. Okay. If you've got one more point or a few more points.
It's a big one, y'all. It's forced motherhood.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah. I was about to say. I was thinking maybe the old abortion thing would come up here. We can definitely run a little long, too, if we've got things to say.
Okay, cool. Because I have a lot to say on that. Because, obviously, motherhood should not be forced on any individual. Anyone who thinks so is cruel. It's cruel. Ask any mother, and they will all tell you, in a semi-joking tone, that this is the hardest job they've ever done. And it is a uniquely difficult job.
Yeah, nothing quite like it.
Many of the other hardest jobs in society have these fail safes that are put in place to prevent, like, nuclear meltdown, for instance, or abuse or unconscious biases from fucking everything up. And we don't have them. Parents aren't given an instruction manual of how, well, okay, I will say, if you watch Daniel Tiger, it's a pretty good instruction manual. Okay? Shout out to DT. But we're not. So, like, we have these babies, and they're pretty easy. Like, they're physically exhausting. You have to make sure that they have everything that they need. But kids, oh my God, kids are hard. They, like, ask these super lofty questions, and they have these emotional needs. Even if you're having this bad day, and you just want to tune out the world, they still need you.
Yeah, constantly.
If a typical child is interested in a topic, they obsess about it. And special need kids obsess more.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Big time, yeah. Oh, yeah.
They are a uniquely difficult group to parent. And these parents are often just told, you know, oh, figure it out. Or, oh, you're so selfless for doing this. I could never do what you do. Well, it should be easy to raise a child with special needs. There should be institutions in place to help. That's like a whole nother topic.
It shouldn't be made harder, right? No. Like it should be. Parenthood's going to be hard regardless. Raising somebody sleep? Who's special needs is uniquely hard. Yeah.
Who is sleep?
Exactly.
Who?
Exactly. Oh. But why are we making it harder than it's already inevitably going to be?
It is physically exhausting raising children. It is emotionally exhausting raising children. I mean, just biological mothers, right? Our bodies are never the same after we give birth. We do these amazing feats during labor and delivery. I mean, we grow a living soul inside of our body, and then our body nurtures those souls outside of our body with our own body. Like, we are a complete system. And our breast milk, if you actually look at the science behind breast milk, it is one of the most amazing substances that is on this planet, okay? And it's hard. And you're told, breastfeed if you love your kid. And we lactate, and we cry, and it's hard. And some of us can't get it right. And some, our partners watch us cry and just absolutely fail or succeed. And then you have mommy shaming groups who make women feel even more broken and alienated from the choices that they make, whether it's breastfeeding or labor or delivery or rearing. And it's just, it's so exhausting. And there are women who don't even want this fight, and they're forced to give birth, and their options are not great. You either suck it up and you become a subpar mother, or you have an unnecessarily expensive and invasive abortion procedure. And straight up, miss me with that. Someone would adopt them horseshit. Because if someone wants to adopt a child, there are more than enough children in the system waiting for a loving home. Go.
Yeah, there's already plenty.
Yeah.
More than enough, really, truly.
This reminds me of this woman that I once knew, and honestly, like, her story is tragic, okay? Like, trigger warning, it really is. So this woman had 11 children, and they were all adopted out. And when she went in to give birth her final time, the doctors told her, you know, hey, during your C-section, like, the state has told us that we are to go in, we are to perform a tubal ligation, and we are to render you sterile. Like, you will never have kids again. And she replied, and I quote, "I have been trying to get my tubes tied since before I had my first child."
Jesus.
11 children. Christ. 11 children. Instead of just being able to walk into a clinic and saying without fear of retribution, like, I you know, hey, I'm a drug addict. I engage in prostitution. I am not an ideal candidate for children, and I don't want them. Like, can we just take care of this? Like, we're not going to. No. No, instead she's forced to have 11 children before a permanent birth control method was offered. And like, the Lumpen Proles have figured this out, right? That if you just keep pumping out babies and give them away, that there is a cutoff point where you won't have to pay for your procedure. So the bourgeoisie and the petty bourgeoisie, even like just the proletariats, have this incorrect view of Lumpen Proles being like shambling idiots. But they, Proles are nothing if not masterminds when it comes to the resourcefulness that it takes for survival.
Absolutely.
Okay. So this woman didn't want children and then found out how much nicer she was treated when she was gestating future workers. Like, she was not living on the street. She got housing. She got nutritional food. She got free healthcare. She found out the system was designed to be cheated because it causes a class divide and animosity between workers, so we don't notice that 100 companies are causing 90% of climate change. And she rode that gravy train until the government said, "Oh, we've paid you too much now. Go back to pimping out your body to Johns instead of pimping out your body to moms." And the state took away her ability to profit from childbearing by forcibly sterilizing her. And listen, I want to say, I understand the real and valid trauma of government forced sterilization against women, especially that of women of color, that has existed and still existed. We just heard from the ICE prisons that we are giving unnecessary hysterectomies to Latina women, right? I am not saying sterilize anyone who does not want permanent birth control. However, I do believe it should be a free walk-in procedure without the judgment of like, well, you know what, if you change your mind? If you change your mind, pay a woman to surrogate the pregnancy for you or adopt. Don't force a terrified teenager into giving birth just because you want to adopt a baby, or as a way to punish them for the sin of engaging in sex before marriage. Because in my mind, that is all it is, right? Yep.
That's it's truly all it is, absolutely.
Outdated, asinine punishment, and I can hear it now. If you don't want kids, don't have sex. No. Natural birth control methods were used so long ago, and they are no longer well known because the church, acting as the state, made birth control punishable by death, by its death. So
by a horrible death.
Gosh, yeah. And that was just to make sure that there were workers and soldiers for conquest. Like that's literally what the witch trials was, right?
Yeah.
And like we're just now finally coming back into touch with these methods. Okay, so why are women encouraged or forced to have children they can't afford or don't want? It's because forced poverty makes people take shittier jobs for less pay, and it enriches the ruling class. Okay, so I went on a tangent. I just want to go and recap the five things that we need to do now. And that is, number one, free, permanent, comprehensive birth control methods must be available for all who want it. No minimum age, no minimum number of children, no husbands or wives signing off on it. I am talking free, permanent, comprehensive. Tubal ligations, hysterectomy, hormonal birth control, barrier birth control, and vasectomies, all free, permanent, comprehensive. And again, I want to say, I understand that government sterilization has a traumatic past and certain people would not opt to utilize these services, but plenty of people would. Number two, robust social programs need to be established for families. Three, domestic labor must be compensated. No more working for free. Four, pregnancy and delivery must no longer be looked at as a medical condition. Medical biases against any body that is not white and male must be examined and corrected. And number five, capitalism is evil and must be dismantled. There is no way to have a flourishing family unit under capitalism. And if you just mentally disagreed with me, your privilege is showing.
Hey. There it is. Love it.
Woo!
I'm a little passionate.
No, it's great. It's great. It was really good. It was really good. Well, Jenna, thank you again
thank
for
you
coming
for
on.
Having me.
Thanks for doing
I
these
have
two
so much more
this
to
big
say.
Two-parter. Oh, I'm sure you'll be back on soon. It's been really, really great today being able to go through these two episodes. And you know, this is obviously a topic that I'm not well educated on, as I'm not
I
a parent.
I've learned
listening.
A lot today.
Yeah, I learned a ton. So I'm very, very happy that you were here, and I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Jack, do you want to conclude this here?
Sure. So thanks everybody for tuning in, and on our honor, we will do our best to smash capitalism. See you next time.
Bye-bye.